Hey folks, this is Anatoly and you're listening to the Solana podcast. And today I have an awesome guest with me. It's Raneel, co-founder of the Audius Protocol. So awesome to have you again.
Hey, excited to be here. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. I mean, last time we met, we did a podcast episode and this was face-to-face. It kind of like tells you how long ago that was. And in crypto years, it's like a decade. Like that year literally in my mind flew by like a decade. Can you kind of like, I don't know, tell folks about Audius and kind of the kind of progress you guys have made over the past year?
Yeah, totally. So Audius is a digital streaming service that connects fans directly with artists and exclusive new music. And that direct bit is kind of the thing that differentiates it from a lot of the music distribution tools and whatnot that have preceded it before. So the way Audius enables that direct connection is by being fully decentralized. There's a network of third-party node operators, artists, and fans that basically have come together to kind of like own and operate this network as a group. So yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. The product launched a little over a year ago, so like in September 2019, and today is seeing nearly 2 million users a month. We're at like I think 1.8 or 1.85 million, so like very, very close to crossing over that milestone, which I think will be really cool. But yeah, it's been a pretty fun ride, pretty crazy ride. We're also building on Solana, it probably makes sense to walk through kind of all the like how Audius works and some of the technical stuff that led us there, but yeah, I'll stop there for now.
That's awesome. And like, what I love about what you guys are doing is it like really brings me back to like my teenage years of messing around with like really crappy old school like audio equipment. Like I had a TR-707 and like these really crappy drum machines and like drum and bass machines. And I remember, This is totally going to date me. Trent Reznor released these mini discs of his samples that he used in a bunch of his albums. And it was really awesome for me to get to them because they're super high quality samples. And I could see how he structured and put this music together into this, like the song, the music that I love. And I could play around with them and kind of do my own take on them. It was just like this thing that like only occurred once in like my, like the 20 years that I've been listening to music. Like I've never really seen anyone else do this. And this is something that I think like decentralized audio just like seems like such a natural fit. Like you can actually connect to the artist at such a deep level and then be able to remix and like play with their songs and kind of get that feedback instantly.
Dude, totally. And we've actually been seeing that kind of emergent behavior happen on Audius in a pretty big way. So when you use the product, like anyone can go to audius.co and like sign up, listen to music, whatever. It looks and feels like any normal music player, right? And I think from kind of that approach to usability has really served the product well, just from the perspective of like there's a lot of complicated tech stuff going on behind the scenes there, right? But one of the really neat emergent things we saw pretty soon after launching the first like public beta was people running their own remix competitions, they called them, on Audius. So basically an artist would upload a bunch of samples to Audius, flip them to like downloadable, so the UI would like allow you to download it, and then just say, hey, like upload any remixes of this that you all want, but tag them with a hashtag that links it back to my track, and then I'll search that hashtag and like repost the ones that I like, and then the best one I forget who actually did this the first time, but someone said basically they'll include them in the official remix album release. So typically when an artist releases a single or something, a month later they'll follow up with like an album of remixes. So they typically will get like four or five folks to do remixes, buy the rights to them, and then release them. So anyway, It actually is funny you bring that up, because that's exactly kind of the behavior we saw play out, and then actually built that as like a sort of a protocol native flag. So there's now an ontology of like any track can be tagged as a remix of another track. So when you browse around Audius, you can actually kind of like navigate through this tree of the, you know, the source the sources of samples for any track, basically.
That's awesome. That is like that's amazing, right? Like to me, this is like the huge difference between what you guys are doing and like the big streaming sites, where it's just like you really don't get a connection to anyone, which is really, really sad. Like, because it in my mind, like even the people that put the playlist together put so much effort into this, and like I don't actually get to connect with them, right? Like, that part is totally missing. So that's really amazing. And you kind of mentioned that you guys are using Solana, and I think what's really cool about your story is that this Zodius is not a Solana project. It's a decentralized project that uses whatever tech is out there, and we just happen to be good at one thing. So I kind of like would love to hear like your thoughts on this hybrid approach and like what you see. Like, is this Do you think this is going to be common, like in the industry?
Yeah, it's a really great question, and it's one that, you know, we've been thinking about a lot, like as we plan or sort of sketch where Audius needs to go, right? So today we're nearing about 2 million monthly listeners, you know, hundreds of thousands of listens every day, some spikes higher than that. We haven't yet, as far as I know, at least had like a million play day yet, but I think that'll, you know, that type of thing will be happening soon. So like, you know, very good problem to have, but still creates a lot of problems, right? So the original like architecture choices made when designing the network were effectively there's this kind of like three-layered approach. So kind of starting from the outermost layer and working our way in, there's like the end user client that, you know, when you go to audius.co, your browser is actually pulling down this kind of client-side React app that actually has a lot of kind of complexity baked into it in terms of understanding like how to talk to different parts of the network to do different things. Now, again, I'll unpack that more as we work through this. The next layer down from that is sort of this third-party node network. So there are two types of nodes in Audius. One is called basically discovery node. It's a metadata indexing layer is the easiest way to describe it. And the other type is so-called content nodes, basically a content host thing. So it's pinning actual like audio content to IPFS and making sure that it stays available. So then the next layer down from that is actually kind of this like layer one settlement clearing layer, whatever you want to call it. Effectively in our network that serves two purposes. It's kind of a single source of truth for, you know, any important piece of information, whether that's like what are the nodes in the network? Which node is meant to have which content? Who controls, you know, a given account? Who uploaded a given track and has the ability to modify that track? Like all of this sort of kind of like base information for interacting with content. We kind of call it like the content ledger of Audius lives on chain, as does like the staking system and governance system and the token that backs those third-party nodes and also, you know, governance and all this. So so yeah, the thing that's interesting though is like within each of those three layers there are like different kind of like different technologies consumed and in kind of I guess parallel ways, right? Like in the same way that at the sort of the client level, we have three different clients, right? There's an iOS client, Android client, web client, that web client's also wrapped and distributed as like a Mac app and a Windows app. So there, I guess you could really count it as like 6 or 7 clients, all of which are like, you know, obviously using different things. That node, third-party node layer, where these are folks basically, you know, in the Audius community running these nodes, staking Audius token to secure them, earning staking rewards in exchange for doing that. You know, those two nodes do two different things. And then at our layer one level, you know, we started out with ETH and this thing called POA network. That's like a ETH sidechain. So all the content stuff lived on POA network. All of the you know, the token governance staking lived and lives today on ETH. And where we kind of like as happens to anything when it's growing and growing quickly, there are scaling problems, right? There's bottlenecks emerge in different places in different ways from you know, how you may have expected. And some parts of the stack here that I just described, you know, there were ways that like our team and other folks in the Audius community were able to fix those bottlenecks, and in some places we couldn't. So the first one that really has gotten to a point that, like, you know, we need to fix it to like continue to grow and to grow at the pace that we have been is POA network. And long story short, that's what led us to Solana. We actually kind of we recognized this issue about 6 to 8 months ago, and really went through like a very thorough examination of what are all the potential ways that we could scale the Audius content ledger. And you know, we actually built proofs of concept and talked to, you know, many of these teams for 20 or so 20 odd different paths to this. There's like other layer ones, there's layer twos, there's, you know, layer 15s, whatever you want to call it. I think all of these sort of blend together at a certain point. For us, they're, you know, we just thought of them as like, you know, who can solve this problem of like, we need a single source of truth that has global availability of data, and that can find, you know, clear transactions to some, you know, reasonable degree of finality relatively quickly. We weren't as latency sensitive as a lot of use cases, but we're very, very throughput sensitive. So anyway, all of that led us to conclude that Solana was the best way forward there. So we're in the midst of kind of migrating that bit of the network in collaboration with a lot of our community members over to Solana, which has been pretty fun. So I'll stop. I've been talking a lot, but it's you know, I guess to tie this back totally to your original question there, I think the philosophy that's emerged among our team out of all of this is that, like, you know, I hope you all don't take offense to this. I don't think you will, because we've talked about this, right? But you know, like, your choice of layer one should be, and sort of, you know, multiple layer ones, even if that makes sense, should really be like the way that a traditional Web2 app would choose between like Redis or Postgres or something like that, right? Like, ultimately, these are tools that help applications and networks better serve their users, and like, the best tool has to win, right? There shouldn't be like any sort of religion involved in you know, what is chosen, and there shouldn't even necessarily be allegiance to things in any religious fashion either, right? It's like, best tool for the job, and you know, if you're not doing that, you're doing a disservice to your users, right? At least that's the way that we feel. Like, if you know, conflate these things, yeah.
100%. I mean, it would be crazy for people to argue that Redis is the only database that should ever exist, and like Postgres or MySQL have no place.
Yeah. Or vice like, versa, right? Like, the right, Postgres, yeah, versus MySQL wars are also pretty, yeah, hilarious, right? Yeah. It's like, it just, it, if you're squabbling over that choice that much, it probably means you don't have like real problems to solve, right? Like,
I think our design choices internally have kind of led us, I hate to make this analogy, but we're almost like the Redis version of layer ones. Like it's just one in memory giant thing, which is quite different, I think, from like if you, I don't know if you ever worked at like a big Web 2 company, but we, you know, when I was working at Dropbox, it was a giant sharded MySQL instance. That was the thing that caused outages because it's really hard to keep track of the data consistency across an application that's scaled across multiple shards. Not that you can't do it. It's just as that application scales itself and uses more of the just more shards, you kind of get into these really interesting lock contention things where you basically like need something like Redis where it can keep like a single source of truth that's really easy for all the, you know, microservices you have built around this thing to actually go and track and synchronize on.
Totally. But I think you're selling yourself short there, right? In that, like, Solana is also persists data and persists data robustly. I feel like people don't really trust Redis as like a source of truth. It's typically more like a cache or like a you know, like, oh, we're using this to aggregate statistics over time and things of that nature, right? But like but I think that was what to get back to your point there, like that was what really made us excited about Solana, right? Like the developer experience and your ability to like reason about how to interact with this system is so much dramatically simpler than kind of other paths to scalability, and actually gets us, at least in our testing, like more throughput than you know, like almost anything else that we looked at, right? Like it you know, in our case, like, you know, we our modeling would lead us towards, you know, we would need to be in the hundreds of millions of user range before we hit any sort of bottlenecks here. So the, like, no solution's a forever solution, but like this is a at least like a five, you know, 5 to 7 year plus solution is the way we see it. And I know you all will continue to get faster too. So that's the cool part. Yeah.
I think like something that I experienced at Qualcomm was that hardware accelerates, like our hardware performance grows faster than like the GDP, than growth. Like the world is growing at a rapid pace, and there's companies that have this like massive acceleration to go from, you know, like in 10 years they become this, you know, $100 billion thing. But hardware is like a thing that will be you know, 1,000 times better in 20 years. That's like, and that's really, really hard to do, right? Like that kind of thing. You may outpace it for short periods of time, but then it always catches up. And that's kind of part of why we'll always see like transformation in technology. That like when people look at the space right now and they see cryptocurrencies are slow or inefficient or expensive, they didn't realize that we're so early in the adoption phase that by the time like we hit to 100 million people, let's say it's 4 years from now, it's literally like everything's going to be faster, right? Like bandwidth's going to be faster. There's going to be at least 4 to 8 times more memory, at least 4 to 8 times more cores. Like all this stuff just gets better. And that like part is hard to track. Like I don't know why exponentials are like so hard to see when you're like in the short term, but so obvious in the long.
Totally. And I think there's also like so much FUD around you know, like Moore's Law and, you know, also Intel being kind of, you know, for lack of a better word,
They're
shitting the bed a little bit right now, right? And
totally shitting
yeah.
the
But like I think it's yeah, to your point, like, you know, things might slow down a little bit, right? But like, as in, you know, the maybe it won't be every 18 months we're getting double the transistors, or, you know, in the last 5 years that has, you know, we have started to see that. But like, I think by the time we get to like Moore's Law breaking, we're gonna have much, much bigger kind of geopolitical issues on our hands than you know, like, I think we've got another like 50, you know, 30, 40, 50 years potentially before, you know, you can start to, yeah, anyway, I don't want to nerd out on that too much, but like, no, and I think that also that design choice that you all made in Solana was something that we got really excited about, which is your architecture is set up to take advantage of, you know, basically more and more and more CPUs, like effectively horizontal scaling, right? Or GPUs, right? Or compute units, whatever, you know, whatever unit of compute you want to use. But like, you know, I think that much has been clear, right? Like we can't, as a society or as an, you know, engineering discipline, you know, we're no longer able to make like single thread computation that much faster. But we can have like 100 of them instead of 10 of them, or 100,000 of them instead of 10,000 of them. And yeah, then your limiter starts to become more like, you know, the throughput of the internet pipes to connect these things, more so than like what a single machine or data center or whatever can do, which is, you know, I think a much more tractable problem. But yeah.
So I mean, like the thing that people don't always realize is that that effect also occurs in fiber and radio networks, like and even copper to some extent, is that you're able to use more lower, basically like your sampling rates and like the frequency band that you can use, like you're able to stuff more data in there because you have better things that can do error correction and use a wider spectrum. So like 5G is literally like a bunch of like, you know, 24 to like 64 radio connectors that are working all at the same time, right? Like any single one of those is as fast as any 4G thing. But when you stack 64 of them, all of a sudden you have like 1 gigabit at your phone. And the reason why that's possible now is because you have enough compute in your phone that it can do this like really dynamic switching and rebalancing between 64 towers that are like, they do this while you're moving at like 100 miles an hour, right? Like that needs just like more horsepower. And that like communication level of improvement, I think is something that I don't even kind of get what's going to happen. Like, because for that to succeed, it means that like we are going to have 10G connections to the home. So the kind of internet that you have now is just going to be 10 times faster. And I don't know if that means that we're just going to all use AVR, like six degrees of freedom, fully immersive, like video, right? Like, or like constant, you know, monitoring of every activity that we do. Like, it's just kind of like the singularity and the communication level is also kind of like one of the weird things that we are observing around us.
Yeah, totally. And I think to that as well, like a lot of folks conflate, you know, like speed of light and like latency limitations with like throughput limitations, right? And I think that's also a very important distinction to draw there. But like, yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, even anyone can anecdotally say if you have like a cable internet connection at home, right? Like my, you know, when I was in SF, my Comcast was able to do like 500 Mbps with like a, you know, little modem for $50 on Amazon, right? Like 20 years. I mean, if you think there's like literally a single piece of copper in that coaxial cable that is now able to switch and carry that data over something that was, you know, laid like probably 30, 40 years ago, right? To send television to someone's house. It's like, I guess you should never underestimate American companies like lack of interest in investing in infrastructure over investing at the edges, right? Because it's always, yep, it's always cheaper to kick the can and invest at the edge than it is to lay new cable or something. But yeah,
so like one thing that like in our development, we had these big plans about building a storage network as well, and I as we were building Solana, we realized that was a big enough challenge that the storage thing is just not something that we could accomplish in a reasonable amount of time. And at the same time, we saw projects like Arweave like hit maturity, which is almost the idea of you know, pay once, store forever storage network is kind of perfect for blockchains. Like, what else would I want to do with a ledger, right? Like, I want to pay for it once and make sure it's available forever. So we have a project right now working with the Arweave team to dump our data into Arweave, like just all of the transaction data, that's all the blocks effectively, the ledger as being redundantly stored in Arweave as well. Do you guys see like those, like kind of storage is a separate thing from like metadata like from, you know, like the indexing that you guys do? Again, like, are these like basically S3 versus Postgres versus, right, like your EC2 instances?
It's a great question, because like effectively when we started Audius, now coming up on 3 years ago, none of this stuff existed, right? Like the only stablecoin we had available at that time was Tether, and and there was no Arweave, there was no Filecoin, there was no like none of these things. There was no the graph either, right? On the metadata indexing side, so like we had to build a lot of these things, right? Like there is a this third-party node operator network in Audius that's effectively replicating some of the things that these general purpose networks do, right? And that came with some very interesting trade-offs, right? Like we were able to bring a product to market much, much faster, and to bootstrap this network much faster than I think we would have been able to had we waited for like the rest of the ecosystem to catch up. But yeah, I mean, I think, whether this is in-house or whether it's Audius consuming a third-party network is, at least from philosophically, like, what I can share. I can't always speak for our whole community, but like my belief there is like, best tool for the job, right? Like there's no reason why if the graph can do a better job of indexing and surfacing data from the Audius network, why that should be something that's like a standalone like node type within Audius. On the storage side, same kind of thing. And I can talk through like some of where we see limitations in some of these things today. I think what's also interesting, like what Audius needs right now, is not so much on the storage side, is not so much a storage network, but like a CDN, effectively, right? Which is what we have been able to build with our content node network. But the way we were able to like build something like that as quickly as our team did was because the problem was very constrained, right? Audio is not that big. Just that fact in and of itself saves a lot of heartache. Like the entire SoundCloud catalog from a couple of years ago, someone went and like tried to archive everything. It's like 750 terabytes. It's just not that much data, right? Like compressed audio does not consume that much space. So in our case, like we can't, like that we're able to sort of increase redundancy beyond a point where it would be cost effective for like larger amounts of data, but use that to kind of like bludgeon our way to a CDN style of functionality, right? Where you can go click play on something on Audius and it plays quickly. Similar sort of things on the metadata indexing side, right? Like where us having this like bespoke solution allows Audius to like surface data more quickly for specific types of queries, and especially like the very aggregated queries, right? Like when you go to Audius, what is your feed, right? There's like the amount of data that's needed across the system to like answer that very simple question, which it's like, who do you follow? What things did they post and interact with? Time sort those things and then deduplicate them. That and then now the feed is even starting to like not just be purely a time sorted list. There's ways you can like boost things that maybe are getting engaged with more and stuff like that. So those types of like very, very complicated things are just challenging to answer with a general purpose solution. So like given enough time and financial investment, I think the general purpose things will always win out over the purpose specific, right? Like there's a reason Audius didn't say like we're gonna go build our own blockchain and spend like 10 years doing that, right? And I expect that to play out with all of these other things too. It's just a matter of time. In the meantime, we still need to serve our users and keep growing. So that's always the trade-off, with respect to that.
That's super cool. Like I think that kind of almost like the right approach, and surprisingly rare in the space, because a lot of teams want to go and build like everything from from the ground up. And there's some reasons to do that, but not always, right? Like in a lot of ways, like you can, it is actually better to use like off the shelf things, general purpose things when they're available.
Totally. It's like right tool for the job, right? And I think there are some cases where like it's quite trivial for folks to, thinking about like a lot of the DeFi protocols that have been doing well. They didn't need to build any of this like other stuff. They were able to like basically build purely on-chain things and have that like work, right? And have that work fine, but. Yeah, there's always sort of varying like trade-offs there, and like in our case, there was just to serve a use case like this, we didn't see a way to do it with the existing tools. I think that'll change, though. That's the most important thing, and like that change will bring about, I think, so many more interesting use cases like Audius, right? So that you don't have to spend a year and a half and raise a bunch of money building something to like ship a product that's decentralized, right? That's what makes me most excited about where our space is heading. Like all of this investment that people have been making in infrastructure is finally starting to get to a point where like it's like much easier to build something like what Audius is.
There's been, I think, like most of the adoption in crypto has been around like financial stuff, and DeFi is like a prime example, but it's still. The tools are really cool, but they're still really focused on the same kind of like ICO style, like invest early and like get a return kind of thing in crypto, not even like in general purpose things. What I love about you guys is that you have a consumer facing project that is really like trying to solve like a consumer problem, right? It's not even... You could almost not even know that there's any crypto behind it. Are your users like primarily crypto users, or are you seeing like folks come in from the outside that are more interested in music and kind of like the like more ethos of like open and shareable music?
Yeah, I think it's really much more the latter. Most of our users when surveyed, we don't ask everyone this, but we can get like representative information back, right? Like the vast majority of Audius users have no prior crypto experience whatsoever. The only ones that do, it's like, oh, they have a Coinbase account and they tried buying Bitcoin in 2017 or something, right? Like it's not, they're certainly not like crypto natives. And I think it all comes down to like what are the goalposts that your project is optimizing for. Like with Audius, the goal has always and will continue to be scale, and ultimately providing tools to artists to help monetize that scale, right? Like helping you as an artist build the biggest audience you can of fans and listeners, and then. Because you own the relationship with those fans, monetizing them directly or monetizing like a small percentage of them even, right? I think for us, the goalposts are just very different than like for most sort of DeFi projects, for example. It's either, like trading volume or value locked in the system or value lent from the system. And at a certain point, then, if those are the goalposts, like I think, what we're seeing makes a ton of sense, right? Like, who cares if your thing has only one user, if you make money on volume and, that one user is trading like 500 mil a day in volume, right? It's sort of, I think it's all really about that. I think why we haven't seen more of these sort of like consumer scalable use cases, in my opinion at least, really comes down to usability. And I think it's really hard to build stuff right now that is usable and accessible to like our average user, right? Which is someone who doesn't know anything about crypto and is scared of crypto oftentimes too, right? So like it's actually interesting. We hear this a lot from users that have like clicked through a link that they saw an artist share or something to go listen to their track. They say, "Whoa, like we didn't even know that this thing was decentralized or that there was any crypto stuff at all there, right? And I think that's like the best thing to hear from people, right? Like if your thing can fit their existing mental models and they're able to get the value prop from your tool without having to like relearn how to use the web, basically, that's a really cool thing. And I know that doesn't work for everything, right? But in our case, they're sort of that's just always what we have been optimizing for. And I think that's it's kind of an interesting thing we're seeing in NFT land right now too, which is sort of the like crypto first approach to creator monetization, right? There's a lot to talk about and unpack around that, but like it's seeing success and it's super interesting, right? It's just sort of like a very small number of people trading like very, very large amounts of money and amounts of things, which depending on the goalposts, that's still very interesting, right? And very exciting. So
which is almost like a parallel of the art world, yes, right? Like where's a small number, it's a very small number of people trading very expensive things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's what I do think is more interesting, at least about the NFT space, is that like anyone can enjoy the art, even if they don't necessarily own it. Like it's kind of fascinating that like, you know, the ability for anyone to view and like, you know, enjoy a piece of NFT art can actually potentially like increase the value of it in a lot of cases more than it like decreases it necessarily. Or at least the value of like owning the piece. But yeah, it's just a different goalpost, right? Like I think in, there's a ton of success happening there. It's really cool to see creators get paid. That's very similar to our mission, right? And that's what gets us excited about it, right? But I think that to me feels like the sort of like that's almost the coming at the problem from the opposite direction, right? It's like how do we financialize creator tools and like creator access, right? Like it's like how do we sort of take the things that are working in crypto and adapt them there, whereas we're trying to go the opposite direction, right? Which is take like things that have worked in like consumer web products and like bring that way of thinking into crypto.
And that like where that meets, I think, is like a really interesting place, because music is a digital form of art that was really hard to monetize for a super long time. Like I think it was really, for a long time people thought like Spotify would just fail. even that idea was that streaming could actually be sustainable for a company, let alone the artist, right? Like wasn't something that was clear to anyone. And I think like it's kind of cool that I don't know if you guys are thinking that like exposing those crypto dynamics of NFTs with music, like I don't know when you got, if you guys are thinking of experimenting there, but interested to like hear your thoughts on how that would play out.
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of really great teams working in that area already. Like I don't see Audius ever being like an NFT issuer or NFT auction house or something of that nature. However, what I do see happening and what I think that is very interesting for like a lot of our musicians on Audius, like they have a fairly large audience there, and because they own the relationship with that audience, it is their choice to monetize them however they see fit, right? So what I'm getting at is I think there's like a very interesting way for creators to basically like use the Audius identity, use the kind of Audius native wallet and all of that other tooling, and especially as monetization rolls out in Audius, like the fiat to crypto sort of interaction layer of that, to share access to like different forms of effectively like merch, right? The question, I guess, really is with NFTs, whether that like secondary market trading side of it is like the killer feature, or whether it's like digital merch is sort of, or I mean, it's not mutually exclusive either necessarily, but anyway, yeah, I think what we would be really excited to see is like, Audius is open source. It's fully, it's an open protocol, right? Like anyone can consume the Audius identity. There are hundreds of thousands of these accounts that are all, you know, non-crypto native people. And that's like a much larger set of individuals than you could access through any of the kind of like NFT specific platforms, right? So, I think that's where we see Audius's role in this being is effectively like this kind of, you know, distribution layer of sorts, right? If you can access your audience through these tools and through this sort of, you know, almost like this like follower graph that you've bootstrapped within within Audius of like Web3 native people, even if they don't know that they're Web3 native, right? They are because of the sort of the nature of the network. That's something we're really excited to see. So I think that's where we see sort of the role of this system being very long term. But it's in the meantime, at least, I think we've been really encouraged to see like how much money creators are making with NFTs right now. So that's the most important thing with all of this, right? Is just helping artists support their work and continue to do that work, right? So like, I think we're just really excited to see how all of this plays out. And, we obviously are very excited to engage with teams that like want to access kind of a creator's existing audience through Audius versus like bootstrapping a new audience somewhere else.
That's awesome. It's also like, I think speaks to the vision that you guys have earlier that like use the best tool for the job. Like, it's pretty cool that like, if you're focusing on building this, like the relationship side between artists and followers, that you can use another protocol that is designed for NFT auctions or something like that. Like those are not, you don't have to stuff everything into a single box. That's pretty cool. This is something that I think was really surprising about Ethereum in general to me. And like, if there's like one thing I'm jealous of, it's that you have teams that have been able to build these niches that are all composable, like OpenSea, right? Like Aave, like Compound, and you know, like separate teams that totally build these products organically in their own, but now have kind of merged together. And what I love about you guys is that you're doing this at a cross-platform, like cross-chain way. Like we're actually going to start, I think, my theory is that we're going to move away from like the layer one versus layer X debates and more into, am I using the Audius protocol to like connect with like a more music-centric following, and then like Aave because that's like the more financial like lending thing, and now I'm an artist that can bootstrap my music and then have it being lent on Aave, right? Like something like that. And no one really needs to know that it's on Ethereum or on Solana or on anything else.
Dude, I couldn't agree more. And I think that's still like one of the biggest sort of outstanding problems in our, you know, community on the infrastructure side is like making that cross-chain interaction and sort of user experience one that's like intuitive and makes sense, right? I think what we're starting to see emerge is like this hub and spoke thing where like Ethereum is kind of the hub and like you can move through different bridges and things onto other chains and then back to Ethereum and stuff. What we really need is more of like a point-to-point-esque thing, you know, like I don't know how one will do that or could do that. But I think it will be really interesting, right? And then it ultimately ends up being like, you know, these things all have different trade-offs. And one of the things that I've always loved about my interactions with you all is that you're very focused in what you're good at, and you don't try to be good at everything. Right. And you need that. And that's, you know, to what you said, like, we've tried to take the same philosophy with Audius, right? Like, we don't want to be everything to everyone, right? We know sort of where we want to stay focused. And like, we're very excited to sort of interoperate with and interact with others who might want to be, you know, the best in different areas, right? Or whatever, right? Even if they're not the best, like, anyone can interact with and interoperate with the Audius network if they would like to, right? So yeah, I think it's telling, you know, of how confident folks are in the quality of their product, whether they are kind of like pro interoperability or anti interoperability, right? Because if you're pro interoperability, it typically means like you're confident that like you have your area, your turf, basically, that you are the best at and that like people will want to use you for. It's treating interoperability as like a, you know, or lack of interoperability as a form of defensibility may work short term, but like long term, that's never yeah. proven to work in the past.
Yeah, I mean that's true about, you know, the general tech world, right? Is like established companies don't really like interoperability because it brings competition from innovative startups, right? That are able to kind of cut through bureaucracy and like move faster. That's always the case. And, you know, like, you have to be a certain, like, you know, factor faster or better or in some way, like, you know, at least 10x to actually have a shot, even with interoperability, because like the mental switching costs for people are pretty tough as well.
I wonder, though, if that's something that could be solved for, like, at the, you know, almost like client or wallet layer, right? Like, what if someone doesn't need to know if their asset is on, you know, Solana or on ETH or on whatever else? It's more like, oh, like, I want to interact with Serum, but I have some like ETHLAND ERC20, like my wallet just figures out how to move them there. And then, you know, my only exposure to that as a user is that like I'm paying more fees to interact with ETH stuff and I don't like that. So like, I obviously will want to pay less fees and be on things that are like, you know, so then the product wins, like Serum wins because of like less fees effectively, right? It's like the cheapest place to trade, not almost this like lock in to the ecosystem, you know?
Yeah, that's the hope. But and we see that playing out, but the kind of one of the hurdles we have to cross is kind of convincing engineers that they have to switch, like the people, there's still somebody that it needs to go build that, right? And there are people that have freedom to say no for the most part. So getting them over the line, and like with you guys, I think it was easier to do so because you are actually so focused on the consumer side that you see yourself, like, you have confidence that you're going to get to 10 million users. This is like the why it's easier to talk to your team. It's like, okay, what are we going to do at 10 million users? We need something faster. And then the engineering decisions are secondary to the vision. But that's not true for a lot of early stage startups because they're still in this like pre-product market fit phase, right? And the only goal that the only opportunity they see is like being kind of with the Ethereum herd and kind of maybe hoping to catch like a draft off of that ecosystem. And that's a tough kind of problem. There's something that you kind of mentioned earlier on that I've been thinking about a lot too, was that like you're approaching, like you have users that don't even know that they're using crypto. And this is something that I think is like almost like this intermediary step right now, where folks like you can onboard new users to these networks where they're not aware that there's crypto. But I think we'll actually see massive kind of that like internet style when Facebook was growing a million users per week or whatever, when we actually get users to understand what crypto is and that they have private keys that mean something. Like, do you think like Do you believe in that, or do you think that we'll just be able to kind of hide crypto out of the way and it'll just be a database?
Yes, it's something I'm still like undecided on to some extent, but like my current thinking here is, I see the approach that we've taken as at Audius as the stepping stone towards what we'll eventually get to. I think a good analogy is like skeuomorphism, right? In like design land from 10 or 20 years ago, right? Like making the icons on your computer look like like the fact that I'm looking at like my dock on my laptop right now, and I see the little like folder, like literal like manila folder in like a folder holder icon, right? That analogy like does not make sense anymore, but it needed to be there 25 years ago or 30 years ago to get people to like start to get comfortable with this, right? So I think these stepping stones have a very a stubborn way of sticking around sometimes, but I think that like these are, you can't like expect someone to relearn how they like do basic things to use your product for the first time. You'll only get like these very kind of zealous, like early adopter types, right? And there's nothing wrong with those people. It's just not as big of a market, right? So I think
So,
we see ourselves, or go ahead.
like the wallet is a skeuomorphism that doesn't always make sense, right? Like, I don't hold digital audio in my wallet, right? Or like my artist identity is not in my wallet. It's kind of like this bizarre thing. It's hard to overcome.
Well, even just the word wallet, like where does that come from, right? Like you have a piece of leather that's in your pocket, right? That analogy is like kind of, already as broken as like the file folder and the file on your computer, right? But I think that's okay, right? I think it's just a way to like, it's close enough that people kind of understand, okay, like my money is in this thing. Where it gets weirder, right, is like in the case of Audius, like when that key is basically the thing that is permission to take action on behalf of an artist, right? And that's not something that people really like. That does not map to what someone would think of as a wallet, right? But it's almost like your identity is maybe the better analogy, right? It's like your like ID card.
Yeah, I'm like, I start to want to poke into like science fiction. This is my avatar, right? And like, and yeah, this is like to me the hard part. And what I remember like in the 90s, where like 6 degrees over email seemed kind of like, oh, this is silly. Like, there's 40 million people on the internet, and I'm kind of connected to all of them. And I really did not see that transforming into like Friendster, Orkut, and like MySpace, and then Facebook. But it's obvious in retrospect, right? Like you have a social graph that you're connected to, in the real world, and all of a sudden, digital world social graph is just so much bigger, right? It's global and like really, really massively powerful. I wonder if we're going to see the same thing with like once people get this idea that this key is my like authority in the metaverse, right? Like how do you like get the mental model to shift there? I think is like a really hard challenge.
Yeah, it is. And I think the only way to get it there is with time, right? Like I think even it took a while for people to get used to the idea of like passwords, right? Arguably a lot of people still aren't used to it today. Like people like our parents or our grandparents who like write these things on sticky notes and like stick them around or do things of like that, right? Like the idea of like keeping information, a piece of information secret because it has, it provides access to something is foreign to a lot of folks still. But yeah, I think so that yeah, I mean, I think like we should feel comfortable with these stepping stones, right? It does frustrate me a lot that folks in crypto often say, we should we should force people to retrain how they think about things because because things are different here, right? Like, I get where it's coming from, right? Like, I think people feel like this, the approach that we've taken is maybe watering down, like by obscuring the crypto stuff from people. They're not going to be as crypto native and whatever, right? Like, to give you a concrete example of this, someone emailed us the other day and said, I have an IPFS node on my local machine, and like Audius doesn't use my IPFS node. Why doesn't it? Like, and I said, well, you're the first person of like, nearing 2 million to have ever emailed us and asked about this. And he said, well, what you should do is like prompt someone to go download IPFS and run it on their computer to like be able to interact with Audius, because you're like taking a shortcut to not train people into this. And like, again, like I get where that sentiment comes from, right? Part of it is like, not wanting to dilute this experience in any way, but like, dude, who's gonna do that, right? It's just such a like disconnected perspective. Like, we could do that and we'd have like 5 users, right? And that's just like not, again, getting back to what are the goalposts, that was not like what we set out to do.
Yeah, and it's just, we're not, the technology and like the usability of these decentralized stacks is just unfortunately not all there. And that's kind of like the hard part. Like, if we were at a level where like people ran like a server at home that ran like their local web indexing, their local email client, like that was part of the 90s vision, right? Like,
yeah.
That just didn't happen, right? Like, so people weren't trained to do that. And like, oh, this is my like appliance, my internet appliance that runs my things. Like, it could have been easier to slide like a bunch of the stuff in, but unfortunately, like that didn't pan out. I kind of wonder if it ever will or not. So it's a challenge, I think, a really hard one. My view is that like these steps are important, because if you can get people to get interested in it and start discovering on their own as part of this broader experience, then you kind of start building up, your like geek army that'll tell their friends. You have to use like a ledger, right? You have to use hardware wallet. You can't like just write down your words on a piece of paper next to your computer, right? Like, this is your identity. Like, you need those humans to explain it to their friends. Those steps are kind of where we will start to see that level of adoption, the virality of it.
Totally. And I think it also comes from like it sort of existing, institutions and power structures starting to embrace some of these things too. So, like rather than saying to the user, hey, you should like go install this other piece of software, or like, oh, you should install this wallet Chrome extension and like, write down your seed phrase and stick it in a safe deposit box. Think about like if Chrome had IPFS native to Chrome, or even like the IPFS team is very aware of this. Like, they're building a JS IPFS client that uses WebSockets to connect to the network, right? So like, if you could actually have that just run fully in the browser context without a user having to know, right?
Yeah.
I know you all are working on similar tools and things for interaction with Solana as well, and that's like, we are also working on those things in parallel for Solana, right? Because we need them to let our user base interact with the network without having without being like super knowledgeable about what's going on. But I think that's what will start to help us chip away at this from the top too, like Cloudflare supporting ENS names recently, or like things like that, right? There are these sort of existing institutions that are like, I think institutions are like a lot less evil than, most in crypto like to make them out to be, right? But like, by working with those folks, we can actually make this happen a lot faster, I think, this transformation.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with you. And I mean, I'm We're kind of getting to the end of the hour, and I'm super excited for you guys because I think you're going to be not like a crypto story, but like a general audio music story, like a breakout company, I think, in that space that uses crypto. And that is the cool thing, is that like this that you guys are building something that is bigger than just a small vision of crypto and tokens, that it's actually like something that is like normal humans can appreciate.
I sure hope so, and I think our it's just been so humbling to have gotten to work on this whole thing and see the community that has rallied around it now. It's like, it's just so much bigger than what myself or what our team is working on. That I do think like we're well on our way to being one of the first like sort of mainstream consumer use cases that can actually find a product market fit in this crypto world. And yeah, it's, I mean, hey, there's a lot more work for us to do, for all of us in the whole space to do, I guess. But I think it is pretty cool how far we've all come in the time that. So I think you all started Solana like not too long before us getting started at Audius either. So it's pretty remarkable just how much has happened in this time.
Yeah, it's been like, feels like it's been like a decade, but just a few years ago, right? We were barely startups that just, we were at the 500 startups office looking at a very stained carpet while we were like writing that, trying to get the first test done up and running. It's been a wild ride.
Well, on that note, maybe we can wrap up. But thank you so much for having me on. And I'm just excited to be part of the Solana community and to get to hang out.
Yeah, likewise. Super excited to be working with you guys, and just amazing how much success you guys have had. Thank you for being on the show.
Of course. Likewise. Have a good one.